Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by fellow host Alex Brown. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, Graham. Ready to get started.
Yeah, we're back for another episode of Wiretaps, once again focusing on entries to Clear Admit's Apply Wire, people, you know, sharing their profiles. We're going to give feedback on their chances of getting accepted at their target schools. Before we dive into that, I did want to call everyone's attention to the fact that we're beginning to see a slight shift in the application season towards, you know, interview invitations. You know, some of the deadlines have now passed, obviously. And if history is any, kind of predictor, we will see probably Yale starting to issue some interview invites at the back end of this week. And also, you know, obviously those Harvard interview invitations are looming. We actually used LiveWire data to publish an article recently about the expected timing of those Harvard interview invitations. And we encourage you guys to just go check out LiveWire. You can sort by the school you're applying to and look at like last year's round one interview invitations. You can literally do all that kind of sorting and see, you know, when do you expect folks to hear. And if you're really geeky, you could start to play a little money ball and look at, you know, what were the average GPAs and GMATs or other statistics about those who previously received interview invites. So just wanted to call everyone's attention to the usefulness of LiveWire as we get into the busy season of, you know, application results. Alex, anything you wanted to add on that, or should we dive into the wiretaps here?
No, I think we should get going. I'm excited for this week's four candidates.
Yes. So once again, for those of you playing at home, Alex Brown has picked out four candidates from our website, and we're going to just review each of their profiles, starting with Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person has a 740 on the GMAT and a 351 GPA. They've worked for 4 years. They've been an account manager, and we'll get into more about what that means as we go on here, but they're actually gonna be applying to start in 2021. So they, you know, have another year to work at this. Their goals are to work in consulting and maybe eventually nonprofit social impact work. And right out of business school, the companies they're thinking of are Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. Target schools, Cornell, Duke, Harvard, Kellogg, Booth, University of Washington, Foster, and Wharton and Yale. And they gave us a lot of detail in their notes, which we love. Alex, I gotta mention that they also wrote, "I am a huge fan of your podcast and would love to be featured on an upcoming episode." So here they are. So tell me a little bit more about this candidate, though, based on your interactions on ApplyWire and what they had to say in their notes and things.
Yeah, I mean, this candidate, like you say, 740 GMAT, 351 GPA, I mean, solid stats for sure, applying to the type of schools that you listed. They're working in the hospitality industry, travel and tourism, as an account manager. It sounds like they've done well, and they've got some benchmarks to show their success in terms of what they've done. They also have a little bit of a passion for education. I think that their parents both worked in the education sector as teachers, I guess, although I'm guessing at that. And their wife is also a teacher. Fiance is a teacher. Yes,
I saw that.
Not predicting the future, but hopefully a future wife is a teacher. So they have a couple of long-term goals, actually. One is to go, as you say, short-term into consulting in the travel and tourism space and then become a leader in that space, and that makes perfect sense in terms of what they've done to date. So you know, they've been successful. They go back to business school, get some additional skills, go back into consulting, sort of in that space, and then continue. So that all makes sense. They also aspire to set up a school with their partner, hopefully their wife at the time, to sort of play out this passion that they have for the education space. So I think that's very good. So some interesting stuff to play with there, Graham.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I have a few thoughts. So number one, clearly the numbers are pretty strong. I mean, I think, you know, the GPA is, you know, certainly Up, it's a 3-5-1. Nothing, you know. It's not a 3-9, but it's certainly competitive. And then the GMAT 7-40. Nothing to complain about there. That's going to be a great score. I actually looked up the percentiles just to see, and they're 96th percentile verbal, 74th percentile on quant, which is sufficient. Like, I really think they don't have to worry about this stuff. One of the things that just jumped out at me right away was, why are they waiting until next year? Because you know, they have 4 years, this guy has 4 years of work experience. And it just jumped out at me as like, wow, you know, probably could go now. Now maybe there's something going on in terms of, you know, activities they're going to pursue or things that might happen at work or it's not the right time, but that did jump out at me. I was like, wow, why not take a flyer on your number one or number two choices in, you know, the first or second round this year and see where the chips fall. They also were worried about their quantitative, you know, kind of skill and whether that's going to be sufficient. And I guess I was less concerned about that, but I think, you know, they certainly have time to address it if they want to. I did love the kind of side goal of, you know, they seem passionate about early childhood education and, you know, want to get involved, as you said, in setting up a Montessori school with their fiance. So I think there's a lot to like here. And I actually like the hospitality background. I think that industry obviously it's a massive industry. It sounds like they're working for one of the big guns. I don't know if it's, you know, Hilton or, you know, one of the big guns in that space. And I think it's a growing sector and a sector that's, you know, increasingly important in a, you know, in a big service economy. And so I think it's interesting. And obviously they have Cornell on their list, which is a school that's really noted in that domain. So I feel like, you know, there's a lot to like here. They'll stand out. Sure, you know, white male, but they've got a rather unusual, you know, kind of background. So yeah, my main thing was I just kind of wondered why not just try and get in now and get in with 4 years instead of five. But that was the main thing that jumped out at me.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a very good point, Graham, and quite honestly, a point that I'd completely overlooked. So yeah, it might even be worth, I mean, applying this year to one or two schools, sort of testing the water. Your applications typically as reapplicants, if they're not successful, typically as reapplicants, or applications will candidates come back stronger. So the experience of going through the application process, as much as it might be a little bit of a humbling process, can actually prove well in the future. What I would say is if this candidate does apply this year, not to set their sights any lower in order to get an admit this year, because that would be doing the candidate a disservice in the long run, right? So
right, like, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they have a lot of good schools on their list, and I think, for example, they're in Seattle, so they could go to Washington Foster, right? That's probably the school on their list that has the, you know, kind of highest acceptance rate. But I would encourage them to, like, sort of go for the, you know, some of the more stringent, you know, acceptance rate programs on this list, or even, you know, Cornell is probably a decent one, but or Harvard or whoever, you know, just aim high, as you say. I noted, though, that they kind of want to end up in Seattle or Chicago, which did really make me think, you know, that the two Chicago schools are good options if that's where they want to be. We often talk about the geographic pull, you know, that exists, and alumni, you know, alums end up often within like 5 hours of wherever they've graduated. So, by car. So I think something to think about, but I like this candidacy, and I think there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of unique insights that they'll be able to provide in the classroom.
And just the other bit of advice we gave the candidate directly on ApplyWire: if they do wait an additional year, and this is for anyone waiting that additional year, is be deliberate about seeking out challenging opportunities to develop and grow. So don't just wait until maybe a supervisor proposes an additional project or whatever. Be very deliberate. Go see your mentors. See how you can stretch yourself and really push yourself. And I think this candidate asked about sort of joining or transitioning to more business-related role over the following year. And my advice directly to that is, if that is a role that will provide you most opportunity to grow and develop over the next year, that's what you should do. But use that as a benchmark for making that decision.
Yeah, great advice. So without further ado, I guess we can move on to the second candidate. So let's take a look at Wiretap's candidate number two. This person has a 700 on the GMAT with a 3.53 GPA, 6 years of work experience. Their career basically went, they started with Teach for America, then they launched their own entrepreneurial venture, and have since moved into more of a philanthropic role or kind of a consulting role around philanthropy. Their post-MBA career goal is to get into consulting or maybe even do some entrepreneurial things again or nonprofit. And in the short term, they're targeting BCG and Deloitte, hoping to start school next fall. And the target schools are Duke, Georgetown, Kellogg, Ohio State, and Darden. And, you know, they actually shared a lot of good information in the notes as well. I thought it was fascinating that after doing Teach for America, they launched their own kind of organization to help empower families to prepare kids for school. And they actually won seed funding at a competition. They scaled the business a bit to reach, you know, 6,000 families. And then things kind of slowed down and they had to transition out into kind of K through 12, you know, philanthropy work. So, yeah, you had some dialogue with this candidate on the site, but what do you make of this person?
Yeah, I love this candidate. This, again, we've mentioned this, I think, on some previous Wiretaps episodes, but this is a sort of candidate that AgCom will be rooting for. They have a really interesting sort of journey to this point with the Teach for America and then going off and doing their own sort of entrepreneurial endeavor, being somewhat successful, and then sort of learning from that and continuing on. And as you said, the person, I don't know if we know if it's male or female, but the person is going on to business school to ultimately run a non-profit in the long run, but going into sort of consulting in the short run to sort of further develop their skills after business school. So that's a very sensible and natural pathway that AdCom will completely understand for this candidate. So my basically sort of advice to this candidate was you need to be more ambitious in terms of, you know, your target schools and what you want to do and so on. Not necessarily in the long term what they want to do, but in terms of target schools. Not to dismiss the quality of schools listed, but I thought the candidate could perhaps add one or two more M7s to their wish list or to their list of schools, and then
so you told them that, and then they had a response, right, which surprised me actually.
Yeah. So their response, and then I'll pass it back to you to comment on this, Graham. Their response is they would rather graduate with less debt and a scholarship to enable less debt than to necessarily go to the very best school possible. So what would your feedback on that be, Graham?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by this, but I think this is a common point of view, particularly with today's candidates, that we didn't, like, this is not a point of view that we would have seen like 10 or 15 years ago at all. And it's something that's more and more common. And yeah, the person said, you know, they'd love to come out with no or very low debt. And, you know, and I think it's because they're, you know, they're thinking of their long-term plan of running a nonprofit. And, you know, but as you pointed out, you know, if they're going to go work for BCG or whoever it is, it won't take long to pay off the tuition for business school and even the lost earnings, you know, kind of recouping that stuff. So the ROI on some of these schools that are on their list or even, you know, schools that are maybe above is pretty good. And I, you know, the other thing that I worried about when I saw this is, you know, I see a candidate with who's kind of a non-traditional and with a 700 on the GMAT. They didn't offer the breakdown up. I was actually really curious to know, like, what's the quantitative percentile on that GMAT score? But they're, you know, 700 on the GMAT, and they're kind of thinking that they're going to walk off with maybe full tuition scholarships at the schools on their list. And frankly, like, if I'm brutally honest, I think that's wishful thinking. I think that, you know, the likes of Duke and Kellogg and Darden, you know, that are on their list, they're not throwing a ton of money at candidates that have, you know, you normally have to hit the merit numbers. Like, you've got to have pretty good, you know, test scores and GPA. it's just less common. Now, there could be, you know, obviously this person adds a unique voice to the classroom. And as you said, admissions officers will be rooting for them. But I don't see a full scholarship being, there'll be some dollars handed out, certainly if this person does a nice job with their applications. But I just worried that they might, you know, need to kind of have a reality check on that piece of it.
Yeah. And quite honestly, Graham, I think in one of my comments, I suggested to the candidate, you know, if they got their GMAT up another 30 points, they would be much more competitive for M7 and for scholarships too. So if they're choosing to target a little bit lower to maximize their scholarship opportunity, I think the advice still holds true. Better with a 730, 740, a GMAT score that's above average for the schools to which you're applying, so that you've got a better chance of being considered for the merit-based aid. Now, the profile of the candidate adds real nice differentiation. But the other thing I think is interesting about these types of candidates is their potential future impact. They're planning to run a non-profit, hopefully at scale, do something really laudable with that. So again, that's why I think business schools really like this type of candidate. Their future impact, if you look at the mission statements of all these top schools, they align really well with someone that wants to run a successful non-profit. So I would be really passionate about this guy maximizing his or her chances in the admissions process and targeting the best schools if their short-term goal truly is to go into consulting before moving into the non-profit sector in a leadership role. And by targeting the M7, they're really maximizing their chances of MBB consulting, which just puts you at a little bit of a different level. So that's basically the advice here from me.
And I think, one other thing they mentioned that I just thought I'd bring up is that they want to be, you know, potentially in like Ohio or outside of DC, or in DC, sorry. And so, you know, but even that, I think, you know, from any of the top schools, they could get to either of those markets. Like, it's not as though, obviously you do have Ohio State and you have Georgetown in those markets, but there's not much else. And so that, you know, there's going to be other schools on the list. And so the only thing I wanted to ask you is, what if I told you that this person was a URM, underrepresented minority, and you know, so let's say African-American female, or, you know, would that change the kind of dynamic here with respect to scholarship and everything else?
I think it potentially makes the person a little bit more attractive for the top schools and for scholarship money. But the same advice would hold true. Maximize your candidacy. So if you think you can increase the GMAT, that would be great. But apply for the best schools you can get into. I mean, I really would encourage this person to rethink that part of their strategy a little bit. Even the possibilities, I suggested, If you want to go maximizing the scholarship piece rather than the best school you can get into for the short-term consulting route, throw in Tuck. I mean, they're great for consulting. They might be very generous on the scholarship side. Yale, obviously, is another one that's not on this list that has a very strong reputation on the nonprofit side.
Yeah, it is interesting because on some levels as well, as you go up in ranking, sometimes the schools have more money to spread around. So there's this weird, you know. So anyway, I just think this is a, I would encourage this candidate to actually do the ROI homework and really think through, okay, what does it look like? I'm going to miss a couple years to go to school. So I'll lose that, you know, earnings, and then I'm going to pay for school, and let's assume I'm paying full price. What does that look like if I work for BCG or whoever it is for 5 years following business school and then go and, you know, set up my nonprofit? I also would encourage them to think about the depth of the network that they would have. You know, the better the school, often the better the network. So anyway, just things to consider. I think enough said on that one, but a really interesting candidacy. I'm so glad they shared it with us. All right, let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 3. This candidate has a 310 on the GRE, a 3.68 GPA. They've been working for 5 years, currently located in the DC area, hoping to stay kind of Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, or maybe Midwest. And they're in kind of a research and advisory kind of consulting role, and they're hoping to make the pivot over to consumer goods, working at a company like 3M. They got a whole bunch of companies listed here, but basically every brand name you can think of: Coke, General Mills, LVMH, Nestle, Nike. So you name it, that's pretty much here. They're hoping to start school next fall, and the schools on the list are Tuck, HEC Paris, NYU, Stanford, UNC, and Darden. And you know, this person had a number of good questions for us, and does a lot in their spare time, and you guys had some good dialogue back and forth. But do you want to just sort of break down what you think of this candidate? I did a little bit of homework here. Let me just see if I can find it. They mentioned, you know, they had a 310, and I know what it was. I wanted to know, yeah, what was the breakdown on that score? Like, did they, you know, that would be useful just to better understand. But you guys had a good exchange, so maybe walk us through some of that.
This is a classic case of a candidate that's, I think, strong in most aspects of the candidacy, including, obviously, the 3.68 GPA and so on and so forth. With a 3.8 in their undergraduate business minor that included, as I quote, a number of heavy quant classes. So if they didn't have to take a test, you know, if they didn't have to take the standardized test, and you remove that from the equation entirely, you'd be like, well, this is probably a really strong candidate, and you know, has some, you know, interesting progression in their work experience. Seems to have done well. Sort of gone from, seemed to me, gone from like a back office to a front office consulting role, and done well in those roles particularly. So then you would think, you know, marketing, the sort of schools that the person should be targeting, you know, right up there. You know, I don't know why Wharton wouldn't be on the list, you know, for marketing and Kellogg and so on and so forth. But the gorilla in the room in this case is that GRE score of 310. Now, the candidate has taken additional coursework, even though they also did well in their undergraduate. They've done some UC Berkeley extension courses. They've done some other stuff too, which I something to do with machine learning, which and data analytics. I'm sorry, but that stuff's way over my head. But it sounds like she. I shouldn't say she. I don't know that we know the gender.
I think it's, I know, I think this is, I mean, she didn't say, but I'm pretty sure it's a woman based on a couple of clues, including the handle on the name that, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. So I think
it's a woman.
So they've taken the GMAT twice. They've taken the GRE twice. 310 on the GRE. What are their chances, Graham?
This is a tough case because, as you said, like without this GRE thing, you know, on the record here or whatever the GMAT score was too, it looks really different. I mean, I was really drawn to the fact that before getting into their current role, it sounds like she went and spent a year training women in transitioning countries, how do they can kind of become active participants in their government, and then like left that to join the corporate world and has done a lot of different things in that role. So I'm like, wow, this is a really interesting candidate, plenty of work experience, great GPA. She mentioned that she has a 3.8 GPA in all of her undergraduate business coursework. So that's not bad either. One thing that I was a little puzzled by is this idea that taking UC Berkeley's extension course on project planning and methodologies was like a way to address the low test scores. Usually when people are trying to address a low test score, they're doing more building block classes in stats or accounting or finance econ. And I guess my theory is that she probably took all that stuff as an undergrad and wasn't really seeing the reason to do that. But it's, you know, obviously coursework is coursework, and it sounds like it might have some quantitative rigor to it. So hopefully, you know, it's hard to say from the title of the class, but hopefully there was something in there that is strong. I was, you know, my main thing with this candidate when I looked at it was I was a little like puzzled by the school selection. So for example, you mentioned to her, you actually recommended maybe that she consider Cornell. Right. And I was thinking, yeah, you know, I mean, given like, so you look at, she has HEC Paris on her list, which, you know, HEC Paris is a great MBA program in Europe. You know, it's one of the better ones. But I was trying to make the connection there. Like, why, you know, given her goals and where she wants to end up, she mentions like she wants to be in the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic or maybe the Midwest. Like there's no mention of Europe here. And so I was trying to figure out, my guess is that she was looking at HEC as maybe being a way into LVMH, which is a French, consumer goods company or luxury goods company. But it just seemed like a thin, I don't know, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. And I also, I did wonder a little bit about Stanford being on the list, just given the struggles with the standardized tests. I mean, I don't know, it's a tough call. I mean, it's an application that requires a lot of self-reflection and time. And so I was just thinking, wow, maybe there's like a better approach here with respect to, another one, obviously with consumer goods companies that's a, maybe not a top 15, but a pretty good school is Indiana's school. They tend to score really well in this specific area with placement. So I don't know, just something to think about. But I do really like the candidacy and I was really pretty blown away by the work experience and the theme of this episode feels a little bit to me like we've got people who have got really interesting experiences to share in the classroom that are not so run of the mill.
No, I agree. So you mentioned Indiana Kelly. I think that's a very good target program. What does a candidate do as they address this GRE score, Graham?
I think, frankly, I mean, I would write a really straightforward, probably like one or two paragraph optional essay that says, I took the GMAT twice. I took the GRE. I think she took the GRE once. And just mentioned, I have traditionally not scored well on standardized tests. And my hope is that my academic track record, 3.6 GPA, which is really a 3.7, it's a 3.68, right? So 3.7 GPA coupled with a 3.8 in all business coursework as an undergraduate and some additional classes I've taken since will provide the committee with a better assessment of my academic ability. So I think there needs to be a statement made. I like the fact that, hey, she took the GMAT a couple times, she took the GRE. It's not like she just, waltzed in, got a 3.10 and is like, yeah, I'm not doing that again. She's really been trying. So I think that'll go a long way.
Yeah, she did take the GRE twice too.
Okay.
And so forth. She probably also wants to highlight the fact that her work experience has been quite analytical in nature. And get the recommenders to really reinforce and back that up.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's again, really interesting candidacy, and I just want to make sure she gets the school selection right. Get that optional essay together because I don't think she's going to go back out and take one of these tests again. So
yeah, I mean the frustration is the most important part of any candidate's application is going to be the weakest part. Because that's the part that's going to essentially identify the target schools that you can apply. And it's clear that this candidate's weakest aspect by a country mile is that test score. I did actually look up average GRE scores prior to doing this episode, Graham, because obviously we're a bit little less familiar with GRE scores simply because we're the GMAT had been the standard bearer for so long. But there's no doubt now I think schools treat both tests similarly. I don't think there's any debate in that anymore. But a 3.10, an average GRE score of 3.10 really puts you in a sort of top 30 school range if everything else was equal. In this case, not everything else is equal because everything else is, in my mind, much stronger. So with the optional essay trying to mitigate this test score, I'm hoping it pushes this candidate into the top 16 type programs and whatever. But the school is really going to have to get a sense that one, this person is academically prepared, and two, this person's academically motivated. And quite honestly, I don't think either of those are really at debate. But this test score is just it just keeps coming back and biting you. So,
right.
Do a good job with that optional essay.
Agreed. Yeah. So, again, thanks to that person for sharing. We love these, kind of non-traditional posts that we've had of late, and it's always fun to talk about them. And let's move on to the last one because that's another somewhat non-traditional. So let's talk a little bit about Wiretap's candidate number 4. So this candidate has a 326 on the GRE and a 3.89 GPA. They've been working for 4 years, working in what sounds like a college admissions role. Post-MBA, they're hoping to move into asset management, or maybe even a hedge fund, and with the very long-term plan of kind of getting into college or university endowment management. So, you know, again, asset management, but for a university. They're hoping to start school next fall, and they're located out on the West Coast in Oregon. And the target schools are Cornell, Dartmouth, Georgetown, Minnesota Carlson, Rochester, Washington Foster, Washington University Olin, and Yale SOM. And, you know, you had a little bit of dialogue with this candidate as well. They've all been really good about going back and forth with you this week. So, yeah, what do you make of this? I mean, this is not something we see. And I mean, I had to chuckle at first because I'm thinking the admissions officer reading the file, it has the same job, you know, obviously, but for business school, but as the candidate that's applying is doing undergraduate admissions, it sounds like. So there'll be, unlike most cases, the admissions officer will be somewhat familiar with this candidate's work. So what do you think of this person?
Yeah, which can be a positive and or a negative for the candidate, yeah. Because those of us that have been veterans of the admissions world know there are some terrific people that work in admissions, but there are also some others that are not quite as strong, I suppose. But this person, like any non-traditional candidate, they've got to show that their experience, their impact, what they've learned, how they've grown, is at par with more traditional candidates. And obviously the higher profile schools that you're applying, the more those traditional candidates are more of those elite candidates in sort of management, consulting, finance, tech, or whatever it is. But that's the standard that you have to aspire, that your experience has allowed you to develop at a similar sort of pace, and so forth. So hopefully this candidate can do that. They can show some impact in terms of their admissions work and so forth. And we know that the role in admissions has evolved over the last number of years, especially with the use of technologies and so on and so forth. So hopefully they've had some participated in helping evolve the admissions process at whichever school they are, and they can talk to that and so forth. So that could be very good. So that's interesting. The person has a 326 GRE combined with a GPA of 389, which sounds super high to me. And so the person is smart, which is very good. It is a history major, so they may need to prove that they have the quant chops to sort of really get going at a top business school.
And they gave us the breakdown of the GRE, because 326 is great, right? But then I was curious, and I took a look, and they have a 98th percentile on the verbal, whereas the quantitative, they're at the 73rd percentile, which, you know, isn't bad. They've crossed that 70% threshold that most schools kind of have in place today, but it is the weaker of the two. So you're correct in pointing that out in terms of the history major thing.
So they responded to that by basically saying they took micro and macro in college, and they've also completed MBA math sequence, which provides an overview of stats, finance, and accounting. So I think that's very helpful. The guy wants to sort of transition from an admissions role, this is my understanding of what they're planning to do, into this sort of asset management role. Basically, they want to work for a university's endowment in the long run, managing investments, I guess. If that is the case, and they're at a university now, my advice might be for them to actually take one or two business courses to enable that transition even before going to business school, Graham, just to show that they're serious about the transition and that they will be fully prepared when they begin their MBA program. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, so ordinarily I would say, GPA and GMAT are really strong. The quant's a little weaker, but the GRE is so high overall that, you know, not a big deal probably. And they have done MBA math and, you know, they took micro and macro as an undergrad. So ordinarily I would say, wow, they could probably get away with just going in like that. But since they work at a university and probably have, you know, tuition waivers, like why not take like a, you know, a stats class or an accounting class at night, you know, or whatever, even online from the university, and just knock it out. And even if, I know they're probably applying right now and they're thinking, well, when am I going to do that? But they could even just mention in their optional essay that they've enrolled and will send scores later on when they've, you know, when they've completed the class or whatever, but just to show that, hey, you know, I'm aware that I need to make this transition. Because you're right, I think, admissions officers could be maybe their own harshest critics when it comes to, you know, if they have to look at their own role and say, gee, how does this role compare to a typical pre-MBA, you know, path? So I think taking those classes would be smart, or maybe another class. I mean, for me, the other thing I didn't understand was the school selection. Because I you know, was thinking about like, what schools do I associate, or do we know just from the research we've done, do we associate with asset management and kind of finance, but specifically asset management. And, you know, the schools that come up over and over again as kind of placing the largest number of people into that field are the Whartons, Booths, Columbia, HBS, actually, NYU, you know, Stanford. You know, it's those are the schools that do the most placement there. So when I looked at this list, I sort of, you know, I went out further and started to look, well, what about beyond the schools I just mentioned? Are there any, and it's true that Dartmouth and Yale do pretty well as well. Boston University does well in this domain, probably, you know, due to its location as well. But, you know, beyond that, so if you look at the list, it's really Dartmouth and, you know, Yale that are on this list that are schools that one would associate with asset management. So I was puzzled by the school selection. And I also, yeah, I just wondered like what, I couldn't really make heads or tails of it. So I don't know if you had any similar thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a very good point. What I'm going to say, I think, is somewhat related to that. My understanding is this person wants to transition into a finance-related role, from a very non-finance domain, right? So college admissions, history major, and so on and so forth. So that, I think it's really important to really think about taking maybe some, like say, some stats calc, some pre-business courses before going to business school to show that you're serious about that transition. But, you know, has this person deliberately avoided the finance powerhouse?
I wondered.
Business schools, because they feel intimidated by that environment and want to sort of study finance through in a sort of different context. I don't know, but that may be sort of playing in the back of their mind a little bit.
Which yeah,
at the end of the day, you've got to apply to one or two of them and see if you've got the chops to make it there. I think you've got to go to the best school to train you for what you want to do.
Right. And I don't want to, I mean, obviously Cornell, Dartmouth, and Yale on this list are all schools that have great finance departments and probably could get the job done, no question, right? But I just, the rest of the list, I was a little puzzled by, frankly. And I thought, yeah, why isn't, you know, gosh, this person has this pretty stellar GPA and the GRE solid. And I'm biased, right? Because I was an art history major and I went to Wharton. And I actually went to Wharton because I thought it would kick my butt in the kind of quant area that I wanted to kind of polish, right? So I needed work in that domain and I sought it out. So I think you're right. I mean, the MBA math courses that they took is a pretty traditional kind of pre-MBA prep thing. But you're right. Like if they have access to taking like stats or, you know, just another class or two, certainly wouldn't hurt. And I would like for them to think a little bit more about the school selection here. Because not only I think did they aim a little low, but they also, I feel like they didn't aim at the types of schools that would deliver them into an asset manager type role. Anything else on this candidate? Again, a great profile. Love that we're getting some of these interesting. I mean, I don't think we've ever reviewed a, you know, college admissions officer before. Very cool.
No. And we know a little bit about what they do.
Yes. So one last thing I wanted to mention before we wrap up the episode is that I am thrilled to report that we got another review on iTunes. Someone left us a review actually only a few days ago. And I promised I would read these out over the air. So this one called our podcast the best resource for MBA candidates. And the person said they discovered the podcast several months ago and have been hooked ever since. As a prospective MBA student, with plans to apply to schools next year, I've often felt overwhelmed by where to look for relevant information. This podcast has been the best resource for me throughout the process. Alex and Graham are extremely knowledgeable and down to earth, and I learn something new every episode. I especially appreciate the Wiretaps episodes, so keep it up. So there you go. Always nice to hear that kind of feedback. And we really, I don't know who that person was, but thank you very much if you're listening. Really appreciate it. And Alex, any other thoughts before we kind of call it a day and get ready for the next episode of Wiretaps? Because we're going to keep producing these things.
Yeah, no. I just hope that person posts their profile and ApplyWire and we can actually give them direct feedback.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks once again, Alex, for doing this, for picking out great candidates. And thanks to all of you for listening. Stay tuned. And as always, head over to clearadmit.com. That's what kind of keeps our podcast and everything else going. So visit the website and yeah, post your profiles to ApplyWire and enjoy using the site. We'll see you soon. Yeah. Thanks. Take care.